There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 678, May 21st, 2015. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the Glitz and Glamour edition of the podcast, the pre-Monte Carlo show.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando wants tire wars back. Alexander Rossi takes GP2 pole. LCH says, it's not about the money. Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King, and we have a special interview with F1 Weekly listener, Louis Janssen. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. I'm enjoying my Diet Pepsi, which is my version of PBR, and loving life.
That's wonderful. I'm having a bottle of Gatorade that's flavored, I believe, like, let me see here, cucumbers.
Oh, the Narain Karthikeyan edition.
Exactly. Narain Karthikeyan.
There you go.
Yeah. What happened to him?
Well, he is racing somewhere in this big world.
That's good for him. Him and...
Karun Chanduk.
Well, Karun Chanduk has a good grasp for the English language and does some very good articles for Autosport.
Oh, absolutely. Most homies speak pretty good English.
I heard about that.
Si, senor.
That means they're not to be trusted.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. They just want to learn how to fly.
Whoa. Now you're entering Homeland Security airspace.
That's true. My apologies to you and your entire family.
Yeah, thank you.
So, there you have it. We got Monaco practice on Thursday, outstanding, which was our today. And, you know, I thought Fernando looked pretty good before the rain came out.
Yes, and what is this, him asking for tire war? Actually, I would also love to see Michelin versus Pirelli versus Goodyear and Dunlop and Hankook tires in Formula One.
Well, apparently Fernando was... reminiscing, getting a little teary-eyed, remembering the good old days between him and Michael Schumacher on Bridgestones. Those were exciting days. We had great tire wars. We had great, interesting stuff happening in the back. But nevertheless, Bernie doesn't want that. He doesn't want tires that you put on in January and replace in December.
Well, you know what actually Nanda was saying to Ron Dennis and Eric Bouye? Was that, look, I've already brought 6 tenths to the team. Now, if you bring in the add the widening during the race, Michelin tire will have another 6 tenths, and then we'll qualify on the third row.
That will actually make up for the Honda deficit.
That's the game plan.
I agree. I don't think that's going to happen in today's Formula One world, which is sanitized, deodorized, and yet there's a mint under your pillow every morning.
Don't you love that in high-end restaurants?
Oh, I do indeed. But you know what? There's a lot of crying. But what I see in today's final practice, which was shut down by rain, but in the end, of course, we had Hamilton and Rosberg 1 and 2. We had Vettel and Raikkonen 3 and 4. But then we had Renault.
And Toro Rosso.
We did have a lot of Toro Rossos. Yeah, apparently Daniel Ricciardo couldn't get a grip.
Well, it's interesting. One side of the garage is complaining about Renault engines. The other side, the weaker side, or the poor people of Paris side, they're doing a pretty good job with the same engine.
So I don't know what's going on, but I think Renault is making some headway. Also, Fernando Alonso in eighth was interesting.
But, you know, one thing I was very surprised because it was dropped because of the cost of hauling all this equipment. Refueling is coming back.
I think it's great.
It will certainly spice up the show, and especially if they let the teams decide how much fuel they want to carry. That will be a big unknown for everybody, and that will be exciting.
Well, what they're trying to do is they've realized we've gone down, you know, we chose the wrong fork in the road. Mm-hmm. So now they want to back up, and they want to go back to 1,000 horsepower, refueling, big tires, maybe tire wars.
You mean to say that they took the Schlossen cut off?
Exactly, over at Albuquerque.
There you go. And so, but you know, what I did not like, you know, do you remember when Toyota Formula One team had a pole position in Japan and at Indy? Surprise, surprise.
Exactly.
I just don't want those marketing gimmicks dictate, you know, qualifying.
No, I don't think it will, but we'll see what happens.
You can dictate those things, you know, by running 2 gallons of petrol just to make a statement.
But I want to see fire in the paddock.
Oh, the Jos Verstappen fire?
The Schumacher fire. It's all fun.
Yeah, as long as nobody gets hurt, I think it's all right.
Of course not. Everybody's well protected, but we need drama.
Yeah, but you know what we should... maybe they should bring in Phantom Caution in Formula One also.
Phantom Caution, Phantom Debris.
Yes.
And Competition Caution.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, we need a little drama. I mean, now we're excited when we see LCH picking up a pen and signing a contract.
Yeah, but he said something very funny that he earned his 10% because he did his own deal.
Yes, I thought that was funny. Apparently, I think he learned something from Sebastian Vettel.
You know, that 19 entertainment deal, Simon Fuller. I mean, you want to deal with people who understand motor racing, not some Spice Girl gimmick, you know.
Unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of Spice Girl gimmicks. Is the Amber Lounge still happening?
I think so. And you know who runs Amber Lounge, at least some years ago? You may not be surprised. You know who was running this?
Flavio.
No. It was run by and managed by Eddie Irvine's, Eddie Irvine's sister.
That makes no sense at all.
No, it makes a lot of sense so she can help her brother, you know, get some R&R.
Does her brother need help?
Yeah, after his successful career as a Michael Schumacher teammate, sure.
Yes, I understand. The Rubinho Club is a popular club.
You know, one thing I would like to just get off my chest. I saw in certain parts of the media talking about Michael Schumacher's parking at Raskov's and all that. You know, with the situation this poor guy is in right now, just my opinion, I'm not trying to be the moral police here. I just thought it was not in good taste.
No, it was bad taste, it was tasteless, and it was disgusting.
You felt the same way, honestly?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I really did not like that.
Well, what happens is people forget, they run out of things to say, so they grab at the obvious.
Well, they can say Clark Rogers has signed up to drive a Renault F1.
They could say that, but nobody likes me.
No, everybody loves you, Clark.
Have you checked the donation page lately?
Love is not about money, like Lewis Hamilton said.
I know, but people drew a goatee and glasses on my picture.
Yeah, and of course the tattoos.
The tattoos. Yep, made me look like a Cossack.
Yes. Now the season and rivalry between the two Mercedes drivers is heating up, especially after Nico's reign in Spain. Where he served notice to LCH that he will not lay down and play dead for him. What do you think that victory has done for Nico?
Well, he needed that victory before coming into Monaco, and right now it's not looking too good because, I hate to say it, but Lewis Hamilton, you know, he went out and bought some new sunglasses. He's looking pretty perky, lots of confidence. His wallet is huge.
Yeah, but you know, when you're in Formula One, you don't buy anything. Everything is free for you, sir.
Exactly, and I learned that from Michael Andretti.
Really?
Absolutely.
Or from Mrs. Andretti, who was showing up in mink coat on a summer day and all that jewelry from Emerson Fittipaldi's wife.
Exactly.
That was beautiful.
It was beautiful, but let me tell you, Nico Rosberg, if he can do a three-peat, I'd be surprised. Lewis Hamilton, he's in to deny Nico.
Well, he said that now that he's numero uno and world champion, that he will have the call on who goes first on the track. But some of us do remember who had the first call to go in Hungary some years ago. Remember that, sir?
I do remember that. Exciting.
Amazing how things turn, huh?
They do turn, but I don't know. I hope Nico can do it. It would be a great feather under his cap to have three Monaco wins in a row.
Yeah, and that will really rattle Lewis's cage. And you know why I was very surprised to read today that Lewis Hamilton, which all the machismo he is, he has never been on pole in Monte Carlo.
Exactly.
At least in a Formula One race.
Exactly. So it's going to be fascinating. And like you said, the second practice on Thursday was interrupted by rain. Nobody came out once the rain started falling down. And I'm telling you, we haven't seen nothing yet. Saturday morning practice and qualifying is going to be very, very interesting. I think the Renaults are going to show up and demand to be respected.
Yeah, it should be. You know, if I have not read the weather report. Do you know what the weather forecast is for Sunday?
This is F1 Weekly. Weather.com is down in the other studio.
No, I understand. But any idea what the weather forecast for
Monday? No clue, but I can Google it if you want.
No, that's okay. Because I think if there is some disruption with rain and this and that, we can have a very surprise winner here.
Not only that, but it looks like the entire weekend will be cooler and damper than usual.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Right now, it's 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday. It's 55 degrees Fahrenheit. Humidity is 63%, mm-hmm. And it's not raining.
And Lewis is dreaming of a pussycat dog.
Correct. And there's no rain on Saturday or Sunday. Cool. So, but there's cloud cover. This means Ferrari might suffer because they need hot tires.
Yeah, but you know, one person talking of Ferrari who can take the shine of the silver star is our favorite, Sebastian Vettel.
Vettel can do it, and I still think that McLaren Honda can pull a rabbit out of its hat.
Yeah, but that rabbit may be a jackrabbit and good enough for a top five finish. I don't think they're going to win the race.
I'm not saying they're going to win the race. I'm just telling you that Fernando could do something exciting, perhaps being on the second row. Denying Kimi Raikkonen.
No, what he really needs to deny is Nico Rosberg. Put him in like fifth place so LCH can win this race.
Yeah, but see, you're an LCH fan. Yeah. I am not.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my.
But I have to say, you know, if this new Red Bull and Mr. Sebastian Vettel can pull a fast lap and grab pole position, then it will be a very interesting race in the streets of Monte Carlo. And his Ferrari will be like the Michelin on Nando's car, wider as the race progresses.
Absolutely. This is going to be a great Grand Prix. I would like to see some rain to shuffle it up a little bit, but I don't expect any rain. There's going to be some cloud cover. We cannot forget Jules Bianchi last year, P9, obviously still in deep recovery. It's not looking well, but let's all not forget Jules Bianchi doing an outstanding job last year. Yeah,
that really is a very painful subject for me. And this evening I was reading a comment from his father about his condition, which he said has now become stagnant and they are expecting the worst. And that's just a very, very sad story, I have to say.
Especially when he's so young. I mean, Michael Schumacher is a very sad story, but he's had a fantastic life, 7 world championships. When you're, you know, that young to have something like that happen, it's brutal.
It is very, very painful, let me tell you that.
Yes, so all our thoughts are with Jules. Hang in there. You never know. Miracles do happen, Nasser.
Yes, that's all we can hope for.
I'm excited. I know you're probably saving this for Motorsports Mondial, but Alexander Rossi on pole for the GP2 race.
That is fantastic news, you know, fantastic. Like I said before, you know, these young kids like him, Robert Wickens, Fabio Limer, if somebody gives them a decent chance, they can make it in Formula One. Just look how good Felipe Nasr is doing right now in Formula One.
Yes, and some of us didn't expect that.
Yeah, very true. And in the case of Alexander Rossi, you know, I put a note on his Facebook page, and I really hope he wins it, because if I'm correct on this historical fact, no American has won a race in Monte Carlo since Peter Revson won a Formula 3 race, and I think that was in 1965 or somewhere in that region. So this will be a great, great win, and this guy's from California.
Exactly. It's we Californians, making do without water, could use a nice Monaco victory.
Yes, Yes, that'll be fantastic if he can pull it off.
Absolutely, the whole Bay Area would be pretty excited. So
Yeah.
there you have it.
Yeah, going back to the Formula One thing, tell me if you agree with me, another surprise could be the new papa of the paddock, Kimi Raikkonen. He has won here before, and you don't have to tell him what to do.
Absolutely, and the best part is going to be cool, so he won't be distracted by the Haagen-Dazs dispensing machine.
There you go. And, you know, Ferrari may run two different strategies, and they may have a second win of the season, which I think will be very good for the sport. And
well,
for Signor Arriva Bene.
Arriva Bene would be absolutely over the moon, because not only is this a win, but it's Monaco.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, I think you get free nookie after winning in Monaco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
On a boat, on top of that.
On top of that or underneath, whatever.
Well, you know what they say, slippery when wet.
How's Jenson Button doing?
Well, I may have to dial Peter Brazier on that. He's always doing good. He's always in a... You know, the thing, interesting thing about JB is that he was with Honda, and at one time they were having a very bad period. And I remember he only lost his cool one time. So he knows how to hang out with the boys from Honda.
Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, he could hang on to his cool a lot better than Fernando Alonso. I remember when Fernando Alonso, when he was asked what he wanted for his birthday.
Yes.
It was a Red Bull.
Yeah, and that's when Luca said, you know, screw you, pal.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't want one anymore.
Yeah.
He's sticking to Coca-Cola.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the Williams boys are also hungry for a win. And if there is a rain shower or a very timely safety car period, which may play to their advantage, I say I would like to see Valtteri Bottas become the, you know, first-time winner.
That would be exciting for Valtteri Bottas, but the press have been bugging Kimi Raikkonen about Valtteri Bottas replacing him at Ferrari next year.
Yeah, and his response was, every year I'm losing my seat.
Exactly.
As for but the press.
The problem with that response, one year it's going to be true.
Yeah, but, you know, Bottas... Toto Wolff was involved in investing in his career, and this is straight from Bottas's daddy to me some years ago when Valtteri was in Formula 3. So I'd be surprised if they don't put him in a Mercedes-powered car.
It's possible, but I've seen stranger things happen.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure.
Like Fernando Alonso going back to the team he drove for in 2007?
Correct. One of his favorite teams.
Oh, yes. I got to tell you something, man. His victory in Monza was super impressive. In Malaysia was very impressive. And he really stamped his authority in Monte Carlo also with McLaren. And, of course, Nando was LCH was pushing him hard. And he was told to, hey, you know, hold your horses.
That was exciting.
Yeah. I would like to see that combination come back, you know, and win some races.
I agree. We need some combinations coming back very soon. Any news from Jarno Trulli?
Yes, he is mentioned in our quick look at the history of Formula One racing in Monte Carlo. If I have your express written consent, I will proceed, sir.
Absolutely, as long as David Coulthard mentions the Trulli train.
Yes, well, we're doing better. Trulli, Jarno is doing better than that.
Okay, excellent.
So this,
please,
yeah.
Please continue.
Okay, sir. Thank you. The 1950 Monaco Grand Prix was second of seven championship races that season. This is including the Indy 500, which used to be part of the championship in the inaugural season of FIA Formula One World Championship. The race saw the first championship win for Juan Manuel Fangio, and I'm sure you've heard of him.
I've heard of him.
He started from pole position in his Alfa Romeo and also set the fastest lap of the race. Harry Schell, this is interesting. Paris-based Harry Schell was the only American in the race. His Cooper was the first rear-engine car to start in a championship race. And this is straight, the last part is straight from Wikipedia, so I think it's pretty true. Very interesting there. Monte Carlo has seen some surprise first-time winners. Maurice, your homeboy, Maurice Trintignant in 1955 in a Ferrari. This was also the first championship victory for Engelbert Tires. And they have not been seen in Formula One in many, many decades now. Fangio won again in 1957 for Maserati. Maston Gregory's third place finish, also in a Maserati, was the first podium for an American driver in Championship Grand Prix. The 1959 Monaco Grand Prix saw Jack Brabham take his maiden F1 win in a Cooper Climax, and he went on to win the first of his three world championships that season. McLaren is the most successful team in Monte Carlo, and Bruce himself won the race in 1962 when he was a Cooper Climax driver. Graham Hill won three in a row from 1963 to 65, all with BRM, and he won other races also. Jean-Pierre Beltoise, who passed away recently, took his one and only Grand Prix win here in 1972, also in a BRM. And this was interesting, you know, and this is going to be part of a theme of one of my future calendars, first and last. This was the first and last win for Beltoise, and also the last Grand Prix win for BRM. Another of your homeboys, Patrick Depailler, took his first win here in 1978 for Uncle Ken. Gilles Villeneuve won in 1981, and the following year, Italian Riccardo Patrese took his first Grand Prix win for Bernie Brabham team. And this was the race where four or five drivers could have won the race, including Derek Daly and Didier Pironi, and I think Andre De Cesaris also, and they were all running out of petrol on the final lap. Olivier Panis was the one-hit wonder of 1996 for Ligier Mugen, and the Trulli train departed and arrived on time, winning in 2004. Do you remember that race?
No, absolutely. The Trulli train was exciting.
So when all is said and done, in all seriousness, who do you think will win the Monaco Grand Prix?
I believe it's going to be won by a Toro Rosso.
Really?
Yes, I think somebody is going to drop the ball. There's going to be pit stop issues. We might have some sprinkles. And boom! Carlos Sainz Jr. is going to take it down.
Wow, pretty serious stuff here.
Well, you know, I don't mess around, Nasser. You don't become the host of a program of this magnitude without going on a limb and taking a chance.
Without believing in yourself and admiring yourself in front of a deep dish mirror, right?
Exactly.
Yes. And, you know, talking of that, we've been doing this since, like, what? We're on podcast number 678.
Correct.
And I think there was some Reagan mojo in that the podcast number 666 covered the Russian Grand Prix.
Correct. It was all meant to be. This is all scripted. We just go by the scripts that's provided to us by the Pentagon.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people have started this podcast before us, and we give them credit for that. But F1 Weekly is one of the few long-standing podcasts, along with podcasts from BBC.
Well, what's interesting, we're one of the longest-running American podcasts with still no recognition at all.
I've heard your name in high places.
I'm telling you, we're going down in the Smithsonian Institution eventually.
Well, I mean, that's quite an achievement, you know. No, weren't you mentioned in one of the worldwide broadcasts of the Race of Champions?
I think we were, but it was a championship that we really didn't want to be associated with.
Well, what's wrong with that? Heikki Kovalainen has won that championship.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a different championship, in a complete different caliber of championship.
Okay. Well, keep the faith, kid.
I am keeping the faith. And thank you very much, Nasser.
Very welcome, sir. But I think, you know, we've done, you know, we do the best we can. We have good support from our listeners. And to be doing this since, like, 2006, right, or 2005?
2005.
Wow. I mean, that's a long, long haul.
Yes. I mean, there are positive comments and there are negative comments.
Well, we love those constructive digital slings and arrows.
Absolutely. And we might be getting some interviews from one of our early F1 Weekly listeners, Christopher DeHardy. So,
yes, we have requested him to file a report and make us look good.
Absolutely, and we've already got one interview that's being edited as we speak, probably for next week's podcast.
Cool, and who is the interview with, if I may ask?
I cannot divulge that information.
Oh, wow, so this must be with Milka Duno.
I can't promise the interview until the F1 Weekly check clears.
Oh, okay, it's one of those deals.
Exactly. Very, okay, cool. It's a sticky wicket.
Okay, I understand. Oh, we're going cricket now.
You want to take a quick break and then we could do Motorsports Mundial?
Yes, sir. We have some exciting information there.
I saw that. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charon region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charon. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinon is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinon.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards from Le Mans and MotoGP. Croc, you've watched MotoGP races every now and then. I really enjoy it. For me, half of the fun is listening to this guy, commentator Nick Harris. Do you ever watch these days?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's exciting. It makes you feel like you're in touch with the European community.
There you go. A dominating win for Jorge Lorenzo, his Yamaha teammate, the Dr. Valentino Rossi, did his usual carving through the field to finish second. There was some great dices between other drivers also. Fellow Italian Andrea Dovizioso on a Ducati was third. Pole sitter Marc Marquez was fourth on his Honda. Apparently, he had some issues with his Brembo brakes, and maybe the next time he will go with Hitco, or he may contact Peter Windsor and get his opinion.
Exactly. I would say Carbon Industries.
There you go. Carbon Industries, one of them is French, right? I know one is Italian, one American, and one French. Which one is French?
I believe Carbon Industries is American.
Okay. I think that one of the American outfit is based out of Southern California.
Where it never rains.
Yeah, and so no need to complain now. Okay, Rossi still leads the championship with 102 points. Lorenzo is second on 87 points. It will be amazing if Rossi can win again a world championship. I mean, he's up there in age, but man, what a performer this guy is.
It's not going to happen, Nasser.
You think Lorenzo will have his number?
Yes, not only that, but once you get your AARP membership card, it's over.
Really? Okay, then we go to from Le Mans to Nürburgring, the 24-hour race. Audi won the race over BMW. The winning drivers for Audi were Christopher Mies, Edward Sandstrom. And I was thinking, shouldn't Edward Sandstrom be driving the pace car at Yas Marina or Bahrain?
I think he was offered the job, but it made him thirsty.
Oh, wow. Nico Müller, and we interviewed Nico Müller some years ago. Nico Müller, I should say, and Belgian Laurens Van Thur. The World Touring Cars were also at the Green Hell. First race saw an all-Citroën podium with ex-USF1 driver Jose Maria Lopez, also known as Pechito, winning the race over Sebastian Loeb. And Ivan Müller was third. And for once, we can say your favorite Loeb has been Loebed.
Now, what's going on with Sebastian Loeb? I find this hard to believe that all of a sudden Jose Maria Lopez is whipping some Loeb butt.
No, he did very well last year also. And actually, you know, he won the championship. And I remember he won the championship in after the race in Japan. Probably, I think it was Suzuka. And he was a little emotional. He says, you know, I'm so happy because my hero, Ayrton Senna, won his championship first here also. But, you know, I'm pretty impressed by Loeb because, you know, he is a rally driver. But for him to do so well, he also did very well one year when he ran at Le Mans, if you remember.
I do remember. And I actually remember when there was a small possibility that he would get an F1 seat many moons ago.
Yeah. And Ivan Müller won the second race. Pechito was second. And Dr. Miguel's homeboy, Thiago Monteiro, was third for Honda. Lopez leads the championship over Loeb, 177 points to 127. Now, next on the agenda is yours and mine, one of our hot favorites, race from Pau, the European Formula 3. tremendous. By the way, the most of the Formula 3 races are on YouTube, and they are put on the YouTube like within less than 24 hours. So I've been enjoying the action from pole. Tremendous weekend for English chap Jake Dennis. Pole position for all three races of the weekend, plus winning performance in the first two races. Victory in the final and the main event on Sunday went to Italian driver Antonio Giovinazzi. Young Ferrari contracted Canadian driver Lance Stroll was fourth. Giovinazzi led the championship with 164 points. Nicolas Todd managed Charles Leclerc of Monaco, a second, with 149 points. And Charles Leclerc was telling me when we interviewed him in Vegas a couple of years ago that he did most of his karting at Jules Bianchi's family, you know, karting facility in south of France in Brignoles. We interviewed, this is a very good talent, Charles Leclerc. He is a rookie in this series, and I think the future is bright for him. And speaks very good English, by the way.
Must be the Cheerios.
There you go. From more of the same file, this is interesting. Autosport.com is reporting that Bernard Charles Ecclestone is set for another lengthy legal battle after being told he faces the prospect of paying a £1 billion tax bill. And that is not a typo from F1 Weekly's blonde secretary, who was hired on the spot after she quit her day job at the Swedish bikini team. And I'm sure you have fond memories of that team.
Outstanding effort.
Looking ahead to this weekend, you already mentioned Alexander Rossi is on pole, and this is I'm very happy about this thing. And I believe this race, I'm not sure if NBC Sports is showing this live or tape delay, but it will be worth seeing. And the guy right behind him is Rafael Marcello, Italian-speaking Swiss, who has now become Italian because Ferrari is helping him. And, you know, some years ago he was on a hot roll. But let's see what he can do on Sunday. Now, some sad news. Renzo Zorzi, a former test driver for Pirelli, has passed away. He took part in some F1 races with Don Nichols' Shadow Team. It was Zorzi's car that had stopped during the South African Grand Prix when his teammate Tom Price collided with the fire marshal who was crossing the track. And both Price and the fire marshal were killed in the tragic accident. So that's about sums up our brief Motorsports Mondial. And we'll have an extended edition next week when we will be covering the Monaco Grand Prix, GP2, and other forms of motorsports. Shall we now move on to our conversation with Mr. Louis Jensen of Amsterdam? And my thanks to all these fantastic listeners and, of course, to F1 Weekly. Louis is a dedicated longtime listener of F1 Weekly. We had a wonderful trip to Nürburgring last month, and he sent me an email about a trip he took with one of his racing buddies, back roads going to the Ardennes Forest and Spa-Francorchamps. And so this is now very high on my agenda on my next trip to Europa, which I hope to make before the year is out. And as with all our listeners, Louis is a passionate follower and have good history of understanding of the history of Formula One racing. And I hope other family members will enjoy listening to his story. And my sincere thanks to him once again for wonderful time in Amsterdam and in Germany.
Okay, folks, we are at the Green Hell, Nürburgring in beautiful Germany. And I'm here sitting in a Porsche 944. With an important member of our F1 Weekly familia, Mr. Louis Jensen. Louis, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
I'm very fine, sir. And I would also like to say welcome and hello to all the F1 Weekly listeners, because I myself am a listener from 2009 on.
Thank you so much, sir. And before we chit-chat about your motorsports experiences, interests, I would like to thank you very much from the very bottom of my homing heart for inviting me here, bringing me here, and the lap you gave me at the old Nordschleife was a very wonderful experience, and I hope to do it again soon in the years to come. Okay, first of all, how did you discover F1 Weekly?
Well, in 2009, I had an iPod, an Apple iPod, and I was working with it via iTunes, and it had podcasts on iTunes. And the first thing I wanted to search for was a podcast about Formula One. So I keyed in Formula One or F1, and the first hit was F1 Weekly. And I immediately downloaded a race review podcast, and I liked it very much. So I enlisted to it, and I've been listening to it every episode since then.
Well, nice to hear that, and thank you again. Okay, now, motorsports interest, here is my favorite question. How did you develop interest in motor racing?
Well, it must have been when I was very young, because I cannot remember the first time that I saw Formula One cars on television. I can remember that they made a lot of noise, and they were kind of going on a straight, and that straight went up and down and up and down. And I guess when I think about it now, it must have been one of the Grand Prix here at the Nürburgring Nordschleife section, and it was probably the main straight leading up to the Hohenrhein chicane that I was watching then on television. So that captured me, and after that I was looking for everything to find in the library, for instance, books about Formula One, and seeing as much of the races on television as I could.
Well, you have a wonderful track near your hometown of Amsterdam called Zandvoort. Tell us a little bit about going there to watch races and what has been your experiences at your home track.
Well, of course, Zandvoort isn't the track that it used to be. In the late 1980s, part of the track was demolished because there was a recreation park being built up in that area. Later on, they tried to restore the track for a great bit, but it's a small track now. It's not the Grand Prix track it used to be. I normally will go there for the F3 race, Masters of Formula 3, and I'll visit typically the Friday, Saturday and Sunday the race, and I will also go to the historic races, Zandvoort Historic Grand Prix, which is also a super event, and in between sometimes I go to see the club races.
Okay, now ever since you've been following Formula 1, what would you say were the top five things that happened or did not happen, races that, you know, you can tap into your memory bank and tell us a little bit about these things?
Well, when I was watching Formula One when I was young, I was a real fan of the Renault Turbo cars. You know, this was the time that the Renault Turbo became competitive, and they won the pole position and second place, and in the race they broke down. You know, we're talking 1979, 1980, 81, Jean-Pierre Chabouille and René Arnoux. And I was really liked the color of the cars, and they were big, bulky ground effect cars. I actually loved the ground effect era, because those cars, they had a special look about them. And I can also remember that I always was surprised that at some races they didn't even have a front wing, you know, that they ran without a front wing. So that was the time that I really became obsessed or really fell in love with Grand Prix racing.
Okay, now fast forward to the 2015 season. It's only three races old as we talk here, and Bahrain Grand Prix is coming up soon. A lot of talk these days about Renault might pull out because Red Bull may pull out. And of course, there is this issue with Crybaby, the Bebeto of motorsports, Mr. Nico Rosberg. What do you think is going on in his head? Do you think he has lost it, or he's going to come back strong later in the season?
Well, I think that he missed his chance last year. He had a chance last year to become world champion. Well, you look at it objectively, he was not fast enough, although he did out-qualify Lewis Hamilton in some races, but was never really able to take the fight and convincingly win a Grand Prix from Lewis Hamilton. I do see now that Lewis has grown in confidence, and I think he's the kind of guy that when his confidence grows, he becomes stronger and stronger, and I don't think he will in any way be threatening his campaign this year. So maybe if Ferrari becomes even stronger in the next races, that his position will even be protected by Mercedes even more than it is now.
Now, what is interesting scenario developing is that Lewis is not the only problem for Nico Rosberg, and you mentioned Ferrari, and Sebastian Vettel has already won a race. Do you think Ferrari will be able to turn the tables on Mercedes by the end of the season?
I don't think they will be able to turn the tables, because this development of the engine is limited, of course, by the regulations, which are very limiting, and I don't really like them as well. They will probably gain on Mercedes, and I do think that there are some more Grand Prix to be won by Ferrari. I really hope so, but I have still some other big hope. You might anticipate, because we as Dutch fans are really, really excited this year because of Max Verstappen being so competitive, and he has shown already beautiful things. And now maybe if the situation is like it's raining just part of the track, or it's a downpour and situation is like that, maybe Max Verstappen would have a chance winning a race this year. What do you think about that, Nasser?
I think that's very possible, especially in the rain. And I understand he will be at Zandvoort demonstrating a Red Bull or a Toro Rosso car. Tell us, please, when that is happening, and will you be there?
Well, that is on the 28th of June. This is what they call the Ferrari or the Zandvoort Italia Days. It's actually geared towards Italian cars and motorsport as well. And Max Verstappen is going to give a demo there with his Toro Rosso. And I guess that he will be going pretty fast around the circuit. I expect a lot of people to go there because, in Holland, Max Verstappen has really stirred things up, you know, and lots of fans have come to the sport. And of course, I will be there as well.
Great. Now, in terms of your homeboy Max Verstappen, apart from him, who would you like to see be the first-time Grand Prix winner this season, if possible?
Well, I would like Valtteri Bottas to win a race, and I do think that it's possible as well, because they still have a strong engine in the Mercedes engine, and last year we saw that the Williams was strong on particular tracks like on Canada, and they were also very strong in on the Red Bull Ring. So maybe they have a chance when things go wrong for Mercedes and Ferrari is not competitive on the weekend, and then Valtteri Bottas could win a Grand Prix.
Let me ask you a question. Signor Arriva Bene, Maurizio Arriva Bene, the man who replaced Luca Montezemolo, he said he'll be happy with two wins this season, and he already has one. Question, if there were five Ferrari wins this season, which I think is possible, how many you think will be won by Sebastian and how many by Kimi?
Well, actually, I do think that Sebastian will win those races. Although I love to see Kimi race, I don't think he has the edge on Sebastian. But of course, circumstances can allow things to go differently. But on raw speed, I do think that Sebastian will be faster than Kimi. And if there's going to be another win, I do think it will be Sebastian Vettel.
Now, Sebastian Vettel, four-time world champion, and last year his cage was rattled by his new teammate Daniel Ricciardo. Honestly, I never thought that Daniel Ricciardo would be able to win races over Sebastian Vettel, but the score was 3-0 in favor of Daniel, the ever-smiling gentleman from Perth, Australia. Tell me, what was your thinking about Daniel Ricciardo versus Sebastian Vettel before the season started last year?
I was very surprised, actually, that Sebastian didn't win those races, was not competitive against Daniel Ricciardo, because, well, he won four championships, and I thought, well, he must be on top of his game, and it was a complete surprise for me, and also that he didn't seem to get it back, you know, in when the season progressed. He was not going. He was not being competitive anymore. It seems to be that he lost his both concentration and his confidence in the car, and also in this new turbo hybrid engine.
Another team that's in serious deep kimchi is McLaren, and I'm a big fan of Honda, so I would like to see them do well. You know, they've cut down the gap to like 2 seconds in the first three races. What is the future for this Jenson Button versus Alonso, and how long will it be before they are competitive?
Well, they've shown some progress again in China, And at some point when I was watching the race, they had good speed, you know, also on the straights. So there is more potential there, that's obvious. I don't know about the chassis though, because it does seem also that it's not just Honda that needs to improve. It kind of looks like that the chassis also has to make some improvements for them to be more competitive. And well, they have a very good driver in Fernando Alonso, which I am also a great fan of his driving style and the way he goes about his maneuvers. You know, he always is very fair, and he's also. I do think that he still has the capacity to win a championship. So, like you, I'm hoping for another team to be competitive. In this case, McLaren, and. Yeah, that would be a nice thing to see. For at least three teams to fight for race wins, that would be really great.
Now, there's a lot of talk about Renault pulling out if Red Bull pulls out or whatever, and also new rumors that they may buy a team and re-enter Formula One Racing as a manufacturer. What do you think is going on there, and what are the hopes that this marriage will bear fruits pretty soon?
Well, of course, there are two... There are not enough manufacturers now in Formula One engine manufacturers to serve all the teams, and if they were to lose Renault, and who would be supplying engines then to Red Bull or Toro Rosso, or that would be a real disaster, I guess. And well, if they were to stay in Formula One, they would like to be a manufacturer again. There was talk of them buying into Scuderia Toro Rosso. That would be a good thing. But really, I do hope that they get competitive again. And I do have some trust in them, actually. It's also our hope as Dutch F1 fans, of course, for Max Verstappen to have a competitive engine this year. And it's only be a little bit more reliable than and maybe some more horsepower, then this can be a very good team, Toro Rosso. And also, I know that Red Bull has a great potential, and they probably pick it up again.
Okay, we are sitting at this, we're at Nürburgring, and we're sitting looking at the Brunchen corner. You have driven this track, and you have also driven at Spa. Which one is more thrilling, and you get more of a joy of, driving and racing your Porsche 944 at?
Well, Nasser, we're looking at this Brunchen corner, and one thing you notice is this track is very, very small. You know, it is. You can pass with two cars, and then that's it. You know, it's not like a real modern Formula One track. And if we look at this corner, you also see there's only 1 meter of grass, and then you have the barrier on both sides. And these corners, much of them are blind. And as much as I like Spa to look at in as a Grand Prix track, this track, this Nordschleife track section, is by far more exhilarating, more... It gives you a great feeling for speed and also for the handling of the car. Yesterday we did one lap together, and after that I went for two laps at speed, and I really enjoyed those laps. And 76 corners to memorize, which is also very difficult. You have to build up your experience and your confidence in this track. Well, for a car like this, you know, a passenger car, being a sports car, this is the most exhilarating track to drive on.
And you know, the track is always turning up and down, like you said, and I really enjoyed the ride. What is your favorite corner or favorite corners at this track?
Well, you know, I can memorize and drive up to the Caracciola Carousel very well. After the Carousel, it gets more difficult, and these corners are blind, and they're going up and down, left, right, left, right, left, right. You start to get confused about which part of those that section you actually are. So this is, I guess, the section Brunchen, Plantskarten, to the little Carousel. That's the best section for me and most exhilarating.
Okay, this track has a lot of history, obviously. Nuvolari won here, Fangio won here. But this year there will be no German Grand Prix, and pretty soon we will have a Grand Prix in Azerbaijan, you know, the great motorsports hub of the world, and also the Korean people are trying to bring back their race. What do you see as a person, you know, living in Europe, that some of these tracks are under threat? They're even talking about Monza being dropped because they're not willing to pay what Bernie wants and also CVC wants. What is your take on this new trend of races going away from Europe and being staged in event in countries where there may not be any serious interest in motorsports?
Well, it's very disappointing, Nasser, and I went to visit the Monza track the first time. I did, the only time I did, in 2013. That was a conscious choice to go there to see the last European race of the atmospheric engines, which I really loved, you know, and a great sound. Monza track was such a super track, you know, and I was there the whole weekend. Every day there was a big crowd, you know, and this atmosphere there with all the Italian supporters, but not just Italian supporters, were also very many French people there from Switzerland, from Germany, from England, and from Holland. And it was such a nice experience. And I will say to you that I won't go to any Grand Prix in Azerbaijan or in Korea or in Abu Dhabi or wherever. I mean, that's not on my list. If I were to go to another Grand Prix, it will probably be at the Hungaroring in Budapest, or maybe another Grand Prix here in Germany. But no, I don't think, as a European Formula One supporter, it is in any way interesting to go to an overseas Grand Prix. And I hope that the things will turn around, and that these enormous fees that have to be paid for a Grand Prix are lowered, and that they give these old European tracks a chance, because they are very, very nice, and they have lots of support here in Europe.
Great. Now, yesterday you showed me some copies of this wonderful magazine, RTL magazine, about motorsports, and, you know, we have more listeners in Holland, and this magazine is only in Dutch. Will you please inform these people, and also people around the world, a little bit about this magazine and the person who puts it out, please, because I was very impressed.
I will do that, Nasser. It's a special magazine. It comes out every 3 months, and there's a lot of Formula One history in this magazine. And the editor is Mark Koense. He is a very passionate motorsport enthusiast. And there's not just Formula One in this magazine. It's all sports car racing, and there's also a lot of American motorsports, like the Canadian, the Can-Am series, or old Indy cars, and so there are many reports, and it is in Dutch, of course, and I know that there are lots of people outside of Holland that have informed or made requests that it would be to be translated in English. So maybe if even more people are going to ask them for translation into English, that might happen in the future. But this is a great magazine, and I have very much respect for the editor of this magazine.
Good. Now, you mentioned American racing and American cars. Recently, you had a chance to witness a Can-Am car in action. What was your impression, and where was this, please?
This was at the historic Grand Prix weekend in Zandvoort, not last year, but the year before, 2013. It was just one car. It was not part of a series. I believe it was with a Chevrolet engine. It was a big car, you know. It was twice the size of a Formula One car, and it had big tires, and I was in a small tent when they started the engine. And I don't know about what displacement this engine was, but it was loud. It was extremely loud, and I was very impressed.
Yeah, I think they even went up to like 7-liter engines, and these cars were serious beast. Talking of American racing, do you follow any cars, NASCAR, and what's your impression of motorsports in the USA?
Well, I must say that the only real race that I will follow and see is the Indy 500, you know, because it's the race that's always on the same day as the Monaco Grand Prix. It's kind of a tradition to watch the Monaco Grand Prix, and then afterwards to listen or to look at the Indy 500. They do look horrible, these indie cars these days. I guess they have lost the plot completely there. Other motorsports in the United States, well, at some times do you have this this Petit Le Mans, or is it still running this series? And these long distance races, GT cars, Le Mans prototype cars, on circuits like Mid Ohio. If that's on television, I will watch that, because I do think there are some very beautiful circuits in the United States.
Which one comes to your mind first?
Laguna Seca. Yeah, Laguna Seca.
Now, what are your plans to go to other events in the next, let's say, 12 months? Well, what races would you, or what, I mean, you're obviously interested in the history of motor racing. What places would you like to visit in the next a few years, or as they say in America, what's high on your bucket list?
Well, I'm going to go to the Spa 6 Hours World Endurance Car Championship race. That will be within a few weeks. That's a super race to go to. I mean, you pay €35 and they allow you to go into the paddock, and you can go on every tribune, grandstand if you want, and normally I'll take a hike around the circuit, which is quite a hike, Spa-Francorchamps, quite a big circuit with a lot of elevation. So that's a race I'm going to visit. I really want to go again to the historic Grand Prix at Zandvoort, which is also a super event. And I would like to say that if any of the F1 weekly listeners would like to join in to come to Zandvoort, it will be the end of August. I will be very welcome to them and take them around the circuit to show them all the sweet spots that I know. And maybe this year, but I'll probably be next year that I want to go to Formula One Grand Prix again. And like I said, it will probably be the Hungaroring at Budapest.
Yes. Okay, talking of history of motorsports, if you could go back in time, what races come to your mind where you would like to be a spectator in terms of the historic significance of this race, or for whatever reason, what races will come to your mind?
Well, you know, Nasser, I looked at pictures, film of the races here on the Nordschleife, you know, the early 70s, and when you look from the helicopter, you see all these campsites right next to the track. And they're having their barbecues next to the track. And there are so many spectators. I believe there were about 250 or 300,000 spectators at those races. And I would really have loved to be here, you know, here at the Nordschleife, to see a, let's say, 1973 Formula One Grand Prix at the Nürburgring on the real Nordschleife circuit.
Yes, sir, and it was Jackie Stewart's, if I recall, final Grand Prix win. Okay, sir, once again, I would like to thank you very much for inviting me here, bringing me here. Great experience, great memories. How about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly Familia, please?
Well, like I said at the beginning of this interview, I really love to follow all the podcasts. I listen to all them. Typically, I listen to them back as well. If I'm on my bicycle holidays, I'll download them again to my telephone and I'll listen them back as well. So, just to say hello again to all the F1 Weekly listeners, and I know that they are just as passionate as me about motorsports, and I would also like to thank you and Clark Rogers and all the other people working on the podcast. Many compliments, and please keep them up.
Okay, thank you very much, sir, and have a great rest of the day.
Louis, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. The check is in the mail. Well, there you have it, Nasser. An outstanding interview. It's going to be an outstanding weekend. Monaco is going to be fun. And, you know, I just like seeing the pictures, the backdrop, the boats. I miss Flavio Briatore a little bit, but what can you do?
I saw his picture with his young girlfriend or wife, as the case may be. Yeah, actually, it's the wife, because Nando drove the wedding car, right?
Correct.
Yeah, he was in the news recently. And, of course, this Sunday, you know, Memorial Day weekend, we have the Indy 500. And
I'm exactly
looking forward to it. So, there'll be, you know, on Sunday, there'll be, I mean, this weekend, GP2, Formula One, Indy 500, and of course, if you still need more motor racing and extended motor racing, we have the whatever it is called, the 600, Coca-Cola 600, or Haagen-Dazs 600 at Charlotte. So lots of motorsports for the.
Is this Charlotte, West Virginia, or Charlotte, North Carolina?
North Carolina.
Or South Carolina?
No, Charlotte. No, that's Darlington, I believe, is South Carolina.
Okay.
Charlotte is in the North Country.
Okie dokie. Well, that sounds dandy. Any predictions for Indy 500, Nasser?
I will be surprised if the race is not won by Team Penske.
Juan Pablo Montoya all the way.
Monty or Willpower.
I agree.
And, don't count Elio Castro. No Dash Neves is also very good there.
Well, he's paid his taxes, so he's a lot faster now.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of Emerson Fittipaldi, and that's another story for another day and time.
Thank you, Nasser. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.